Well, a good Friday afternoon to you. 4:06 here, News Talk 105.9 WMAL, where we're making sense of the news. Coming up, we'll be joined by Congressman Andrew Clyde, representing Georgia's 9th Congressional District. We'll talk to him about whether or not it's possible to stop D.C.'s criminal code shenanigans. They're making it more dangerous in the district. Republicans have an opportunity to stop it. Will they? We'll discuss that with the congressman. Mary Margaret Olihan talks about another event happening in D.C., the March for Life today. She'll join us at 5 o'clock. And then at 5:30, Dr. Matthew Spaulding is here from Hillsdale. He's also a member of Governor Ron DeSantis's college. Let me get this right. The new College of Florida Board of Trustees. That seems important. And we'll talk about this education scandal going on in Florida, where the left is trying to inject Marxist propaganda into the schools. And DeSantis said, yeah, no, that's not happening. And the media is outraged by all of it. That's ahead. You can join us today at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. Earlier this week, we found out that Joe Biden's mishandling of classified documents resulted in a very special deal, a very special deal. Joe Biden's personal attorneys were able to run around and search for whatever documents they felt like and then hand over whatever documents they felt like to the Justice Department. The Justice Department, according to the Wall Street Journal, considered but rejected a role in searching Biden's properties for more mishandled classified documents. Why is that? Is that normal? Is that how it all works? The FBI stays out of it unless you rifle through your own belongings once it's clear that you've been mishandling classified information? Let's talk about that with our next guest. He is Thomas Fuentes. He's the president of Fuentes International LLC, and he's a former assistant director of the FBI. Thomas, great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Vince. Good to be here.
What do you make of this story that the FBI not involved in searching for more classified documents when it was already clear that Joe Biden had mishandled so many?
To me, it's just another example of the FBI being misused or not used when it should be. You know, you have a situation here where they don't know what documents are there at first. And when the attorneys, whether they work for Biden or the White House indirectly, you know, they find these documents, the FBI is notified or Department of Justice is notified, whatever decision is made, we're not sure why, they don't declare a crime scene and have the FBI do a diligent search like was ordered for Mar-a-Lago. The interesting thing is, in Mar-a-Lago, the FBI knew what documents were at Mar-a-Lago that Trump had. They'd already visited the premises. The Records Act people had already been in discussion. The only comment the FBI had a couple of months before the raid was put a lock on that closet door, which was done. And the FBI later cut it off when they did the raid. Now, here you have a situation where you really don't know what Biden has. At least we're not told that anybody knew. And they start this search to find some of these documents. Now, the question is, did the people from the records know that some of these things were there and that's why they initiated this, contacting justice and saying, you know, we believe these particular specific documents were never turned in when the Obama administration left office, but we don't know that yet.
The Wall Street Journal reports the following. I want to see if this makes sense to you. They say one reason not to involve the FBI at an early stage, that would be to search for these documents. That way, the Justice Department would preserve the ability to take a tougher line, including executing a future search warrant if negotiations ever turned hostile. I'm sorry, does that make sense to you that the Justice Department was trying to reserve an opportunity to get tougher in the future?
No, makes no sense. I think that's absurd. You would have wanted the crime scene preserved right from the start and have the FBI locate these documents, subject them to, laboratory analysis, whether it's fingerprints or other material on the boxes, on the file folders, find out who handled them, trace back when did those documents leave the White House or the vice president's office, and you know, unlike Trump, who can declassify anything at the time he was president, vice president has no such authority. So essentially, when those documents are taken out of a secure government facility at the end of the Obama administration, they're essentially stolen. And they have no business being in Biden's possession or in one of his offices or garage or anywhere else under his control.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with all of this, though, because as we learned through all of the constitutional conversations around Donald Trump, you can't the policy of the Justice Department is not to indict a sitting president of the United States. So I'm a little confused at what this whole special counsel thing is supposed to end up with, other than, I guess, a public report.
Well, I guess. But, you know, the president has the legal authority to declassify documents when he's the president.
Yes.
So those documents, once he has them shipped, whether he personally was involved in the shipping process with GSA or not, but when those documents are taken to Mar-a-Lago, that's it. They're no longer classified. Now, there's no mechanism in declassification where you actually write on the where the president makes a note on the document, here, this date, I'm declassifying these documents. But essentially, when he takes them, they're declassified.
Right. In that case, yeah, it's implied.
He has the sole authority in the U.S. government that can declassify basically anything.
Totally. And the way that a president
has authority.
And the way that a president would do that is it's happened time and time again. Presidents of the United States have routinely declassified information and told the public about things that it's up to them whether they do it, and they do it in an arbitrary way. They could stand in front of the press. They could, as Obama did when he announced that bin Laden was killed by SEAL Team 6, he declassified that on the spot. He just said it out loud. And that was at his discretion. Was it wise? No, probably not. But he did it anyway, and it was his right to do it.
That's right. It was his right to do it. And all of the presidents that have taken documents, you can go back to Clinton or Bush or Obama, and now President Trump, had the legal authority to take those documents and declassify them. Now, the FBI already knew these documents were at Mar-a-Lago. So my opinion was it was not a fishing expedition. They were trying to locate specific information, specific reports or documents that Trump had that would prove embarrassing to the FBI. You know, one of the suggestions is the report regarding Crossfire Hurricane, which was the FBI's Russia investigation. Trump had that report while he was president. And I think that would be so embarrassing to the FBI. They wanted that report back, and they had no regard whether they were ever going to prosecute him or not. That wasn't that wasn't the operation. The mission was get back embarrassing things, take control of it, and never give it back to Trump.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In that particular case, Trump had tweeted that he was declassifying all of the documents related to the Russia investigation. So that in that case, he had explicitly announced in public his intention to declassify. And yet his home gets raided. And we get very different treatment for Joe Biden. In fact, the treatment that Biden's getting includes the reports this week that the White House and the Justice Department sought to keep this entire scandal secret. And the only reason it broke out in public is because CBS News reported on it earlier this month. In fact, the White House and the Justice Department, according to the Washington Post, had agreed not to tell the public about this. That all changed earlier this month. That really throws into question this whole the Justice Department's totally independent of the White House thing, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's no question that the Department of Justice and the FBI have been weaponized. And this went back, for several years now, but particularly lately. There's no question about it, that the treatment that conservatives or Republicans or Trump supporters or MAGA people, the treatment they get is unlike anything that happens to a Democrat. So the fact that they seize phones from, you know, members of Congress, the fact that they're doing all these type of activities is just out of control, in my opinion.
Out of control. I want to get your reaction to something that the current FBI director, Christopher Wray, said this week. He was in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum. And he was talking about how the FBI has all of these relationships with corporate America, now the private sector, and that they're working together extensively. And when you hear the FBI director say something like that, you can't help but think of big tech, the ways in which the FBI has gotten the big tech companies to censor American citizens having perfectly decent, you know, First Amendment protected conversations. Here's Chris Wray this week.
And I think the sophistication of the private sector is improving, and particularly important, the level of collaboration between the private sector and the government, especially the FBI, has, I think, made significant strides. Pretty much every technology we could talk about today, we see both great opportunity, but great dangers in the wrong hand.
Thomas Fuentes, as an assistant, as a former assistant director of the FBI, when you hear him talk about that, is this benign? Is this in the public interest, or is this something that worries you?
Well, it worries me, but I think that what's interesting here is when Elon Musk says that the FBI was working with and actually paying money to Twitter for a variety of things, to censor people and, you know, to block information from becoming public, have people removed from the platform. Oh, that's disinformation, and that's a rumor, and that's all that. When Ray says it, he admits it. That's what they're doing. They're working with these big tech companies, and in particular, you know, they're working with and paying tech companies such as social media companies, Twitter, Facebook, and others. So I think that, you know, in a way, what he's admitting to is actually what's coming out publicly anyway, that the FBI was doing that activity. And basically getting private sector to censor people and violate their First Amendment rights, which the government directly is not supposed to do.
No, unquestionably, and yet they are. So as an alumnus of the FBI, is your view shared among other people who used to be with the FBI? Are you one of the only ones who thinks that the FBI's headed in the wrong direction?
And I notice on other channels, on cable news, associates of mine, colleagues and friends for 20, 30 years are on the air now saying the same thing. And I'm talking about Chris Wecker has been on Fox News repeatedly talking about this. Terry Turchi, who was an assistant special agent in charge with me in San Francisco in the 90s, has been talking about this. Kevin Perkins, who was an assistant director. We were all assistant directors in the same, and we kind of came up the ranks together as supervisors, assistants in charge, special agents in charge, and they're saying the same thing. And it's interesting because they're in the same generation of management officials that I am. You know, I came in in 1979 as an agent and faced mandatory retirement in November of 2008, and they were a little bit younger, so they would have had to retire shortly after I did. But, you know, at that time, the Bureau was completely different than the reporting we see about the FBI now.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. The nearly 30 years that I had as a special agent, during that time, like again, I retired in November 08, I could never have told you who anybody that was a colleague, that was a peer, a coworker, a supervisor, none of them. I had no clue who any of them ever voted for or what their political affiliations were. We all kept that completely private. So later, when I see, you know, made public the text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and others talking about what they're talking about, that they're trying to sabotage Trump from becoming president, and if it fails, this is, you know, back during the campaign days, the first campaign, and if that fails, they've got an insurance policy. They're going to get them. And then, of course, we see the Russia hoax information come out, the Crossfire Hurricane case. We also see lies told in order to obtain a FISA warrant, electronic surveillance, and that's from the Intelligence Service Act that allows that in national security cases.
Yep.
FBI officials and lawyers lied so that the FBI could obtain that wiretap and do that kind of spying on Trump. And that was just unheard of. You know, friends of mine were contacting me. Can this be true?
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is that, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Have you ever heard of that, misusing the dossier, which was proven to be false, yet they still used it? I said, no, that's not. In my day, we knew that those were offenses for which we could be fired. We could have our incomes and pensions confiscated, lose our property, lose our freedom. It would have been unheard of. And now you see it, you know, as a matter of fact, with no accountability or punishment. Now, Strzok gets fired, McCabe gets fired. Yet they're on cable news making money. They're writing books making money. So if anything, it's made them greater celebrities.
Yes.
And more financially secure as a result of their lying and the damage that done. And it's done severe damage to the FBI.
The incentives are totally perverse. Lastly, what do you think, Thomas Fuentes, of the January 6th investigation, the single biggest investigation in FBI history?
I think it's horrible, frankly. Now, if you had an individual that you have evidence and could document that they damaged property or they beat up a member of Congress or a law enforcement officer, that would be one thing.
Sure.
But you have people that are arrested and incarcerated who were outside, never even went in the Capitol. They were outside as one of the spectators lawfully protesting and assembling, which is their First Amendment right, and you still have them arrested. So I think this has gone way beyond the pale. And then, you know, I learned the last few months that you have some of these prisoners in the D.C. lockup that were not even allowed to get haircuts. They had to find an attorney that would take their case so they could sue the prison system after months of not getting a haircut to be allowed to get a haircut or to be allowed to have family members visit or attorneys visit. And I think this in and of itself is clear and unusual punishment, which is a violation of the Constitution all by itself once they've gotten to jail. And most of them, in my opinion, don't belong in jail, especially after you have the summer of 2020 with the riots of BLM and Antifa, the cops that were injured, the properties destroyed, people killed, all of that. And you've had very little, if anything, or practically no evidence that the FBI tried to infiltrate those organizations, which are essentially terrorist organizations. And yet, you know, we know that FBI agents had to have infiltrated the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers and these other organizations. And yet you have Ray not answer questions. You have the January 6th committee not even put Pelosi on the stand. You know, and I think I wish former President Trump had testified before that committee and said that days before the January 6th riot, he offered, they had information, the FBI had information of possible violence that might happen from a very select few, and he offered the National Guard to be mobilized to secure the Capitol. Nancy Pelosi refused it. Mayor Bowser of D.C. refused it. I would have liked to have seen Trump testify and tell the world, in no uncertain, nationwide, international, live television, I authorized security that they refused. Mm-hmm. And why are they still hiding 14,000 hours of video that was taken in and around the Capitol on that day?
Thomas Fuentes, president of Fuentes International, LLC, and a former assistant director of the FBI. Thomas, really appreciate your time today, sir. With carjackings exploding in Washington, D.C., the city council just made it less consequential to commit a carjacking. They lowered the penalties. Can Congress stop this crap? We'll ask a member of Congress next, ahead on the Vince Colanese Show. Well, good afternoon. You have 4:35 here at News Talk 105.9 WMAL, where we're making sense of the news. Coming up, top of the hour, Mary Margaret Olihan is with us from the Daily Signal. She was out at the March for Life today. We'll get a reporting perspective from her on that important event. Dr. Matthew Spaulding joins us at 5:30 from Hillsdale. He's working with Ron DeSantis on education in Florida, and that state just intercepted some Marxist propaganda in the schools there. The media is angry that they caught it. It's an amazing story. We'll explain all ahead. You can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. This week, the D.C. City Council vote to override Mayor Muriel Bowser's veto of a bill that reduces penalties for committing crimes in the district. What kind of crimes, you ask? I'm glad you asked. Crimes like robberies, carjackings, home evasion, illegal gun possession, all have lower penalties now, thanks to the D.C. City Council overriding Mayor Bowser's veto. Fascinating, first of all, that these Democrats have some division of opinion. Not much, but just enough for the mayor to veto them and then to be overridden. But there's one more component here. Those of you who know how D.C. laws work, once they're passed, they're then considered by Congress. That's right. Congress gets 60 days to contemplate whether or not it'll allow this law to go into effect, which is why I'm very eager to talk to our next guest. Congressman Andrew Clyde represents Georgia's 9th Congressional District, member of the Appropriations Committee and the Freedom Caucus. Hello, sir. Great to have you with us.
Well, Vince, it's great to be with you this afternoon.
Tell us, what do you make of this law that D.C. is attempting to pass?
Well, I think it's just another example of the failed leadership of Washington, D.C. I think it's past time that we repealed the Home Rule Act and reasserted Congress's authority when it comes to legislation. Just like the Constitution says, you know, in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, where the United States Congress has the authority and the responsibility to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district. I mean, that's in the Constitution. Congress has the authority. We delegated it through the Home Rule Act. It's obvious that that Home Rule Act was a failed experiment. It's time for Congress to take it back and reassert proper leadership in Washington, D.C. This is our nation's capital. It is now rampant with crime, with hard drug use, with laws now, with this law that will make the citizens less safe, and the citizens who want to come to Washington, D.C., to their capital city, and to see the amazing things that are here, you know, that's not good for them either. Vince, this is a big problem, and we have got to take it head on, and we've got to strike this law down. It's for the safety of the folks of Washington, D.C. Even the mayor who vetoed the law was overridden by the D.C. Council. That shows you how far left and how out of touch with reality that the D.C. Council actually is. So it's time for Congress to step in, reassert its constitutional authority, and take this law out and honestly go farther than that, and that is to eliminate home rule.
How does this work in practice? Is it, I believe it's the Oversight Committee, right, that can do this, or does it take the entirety of Congress to stop this law?
No, it takes the entirety of Congress. It's a joint resolution that gets introduced, and when we'll vote on it in Congress, and we in the Republican majority, you know, like any other bill, I imagine it will go through the Oversight Committee for regular order, be debated on, and then it will then go down to the Rules Committee and then to the House floor, be voted on, and the Senate will vote on it too. And I expect that it will pass in both houses. You know, this is not a Republican versus a Democrat issue. This is an American issue. This is a citizen safety issue. I think it's going to be a very bipartisan bill, and I think we'll have support on both sides of the aisle.
So you do think Congress will block this change to the criminal code, making it easier and less consequential to commit crimes? You think Congress will block it?
Oh, I fully expect Congress to block it. You know, I think if Congress doesn't block it, we're not doing the job that our representatives are here to do. No, I mean, this is an absolute atrocity for a piece of legislation. And it just goes to show you how out of touch with reality the D.C. Council is. I mean, they overrode the veto by, I think, 12-1. That's
yes.
Insane.
Yes, that's exactly right. Phil Mendelson is the chairman of the D.C. City Council. He's upset that Mayor Muriel Bowser has been honest about this legislation, and he says this plays right into the hands of the Freedom Caucus. Listen to this.
And it plays into folks like the Freedom Caucus in Congress who are going to use the mayor's veto and her rhetoric against us when this bill, goes up to Congress. And that is a problem.
He's very upset that she would express a difference of opinion here.
Well, you know, for once, I actually agree with Mayor Bowser that this is a bad bill. I mean, like you mentioned early on, I mean, it reduces criminal penalties for carjackings, for home invasions, for burglaries, for robberies. I mean, this is not the signal that you want to be sending, that that people now will be punished less for committing these crimes. No, absolutely not. People need to be held accountable when they break the law, not signal to them that, it's okay, the penalties won't be as bad anymore, so, you know, go right ahead. No, absolutely not. I think that Council Chair Mr. Mendelson is out of touch with reality. He says that Mayor Bowser's rhetoric is irresponsible. His rhetoric is irresponsible.
The National Review pulled together some of the data on what's actually happening when it comes to crime in the city. So you talk about all the things that they want to lower the penalties for. And listen to this. In Washington, D.C., robberies have increased 2% and motor vehicle theft has increased 8% just between the years 2021 and 2022. It was already up in 21. And so far, theft from auto, that is people stealing stuff out of cars, is up 31% in 2023 from the 2022 levels, according to the Metropolitan Police Department. Between January and August 30th of last year, the Metropolitan Police Department recorded 326 carjackings. That's a 27% increase compared to the same time frame in the prior year. 73% of those carjackings involved guns. So this is a city that is out of control. The criminals are walking around with impunity, and the D.C. City Council decided now's the time to go easier on them.
And you also have to add in there over 200 murders. 200 murders. I mean, you know, Vince.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This D.C. council needs a reality check, and Congress needs to provide that reality check, and we need to do that through a joint resolution, striking down this law, and then we need to go farther, and we need to take care of the D.C. council, too.
What gives you confidence that Congress will be on your side on this? Has Kevin McCarthy signaled that he would do this? I think he had spoken at one point about getting rid of the D.C. home rule.
Well, I have not spoken to Speaker McCarthy about this, but, this is common sense. And we Republicans and we are bringing common sense back to Washington, D.C. I can't imagine that there would be a member of Congress that would be against this. But maybe there will be. But the Democrats have been soft on crime and have been, the ones wanting to defund the police. And this is a perfect example of soft on crime. We Republicans are not. But I'm certain there are some Democrats that realize that this is a huge mistake.
Yeah. Axios had reported at one point that as a condition for McCarthy becoming Speaker of the House, that he would agree to allow efforts like yours to hold D.C. accountable here. Is that your understanding? Did McCarthy make such an agreement?
Well, I was not privy to an agreement such as that. I don't think that actually was part of the agreement. Okay. It would be nice if it was, but I think it's just common sense. I believe the leader the speaker will be with us on this, as I think, anyone who believes that criminals should suffer or should have consequences that relate to their crime. Mm-hmm. So, you know, appropriate consequences.
Yes.
So this is just common sense, Vince. This is just common sense.
I agree with you, Congressman. So should you prevail here and repeal D.C. home rule, what kind of laws should the district have? How do we clean the district up? How does Congress actually get control of things?
Well, first off, I think that taking down this law right in and of itself is the first
yeah.
step. And then I believe that they're also talking about allowing illegal aliens to vote in D.C. I mean, you know, that's another reality check that they need to have. And then, you know, taking down home rule or significantly modifying home rule such that it brings back common sense and safety to the city, I think is the focus. Exactly how that is, you know, will look, we're working on that.
Yeah.
And I think that might be up for debate. But
yeah.
Exactly how it will look, because I think there's value in different opinions as to exactly how Congress needs to handle that. I mean, it's a different city from what it was 40 years ago when home rule was put in place. So I think there's some definite value in debating how it looks. But there's no question that it needs to be modified.
Yeah, no question at all. And yet here we are. I mean, with the mayor, one of the unbelievable lonely voices here, and saying, no, we shouldn't go easier on criminals, the whole D.C. City Council, practically the whole D.C. City Council, with the exception of council member Trayvon White, who, by the way, is one of the craziest members, actually. But he was a no vote on lowering penalties for criminals. So in that sense, he got it right at least once. But here we are watching this happen. And I hope Congress can actually stop it, Congressman. And I know that's your initiative. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I believe we will. This will be a win for all of America, not just the citizens of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, because they need a capital that they can visit and feel safe in. And unfortunately, that's not the situation we're in right now. Things have gotten a lot worse. Congressman Andrew Clyde, thank you very much from Georgia's 9th Congressional District. Good to talk to you today, sir.
Vince, thanks for having me on. Have a good afternoon.
You too. It's just awful, you know, and. It was not that long ago. It was not that long ago you could send people to Union Station. They'd arrive. It's all beautiful. What a beautiful building that is. And the only time they clean the homeless up now are when Joe Biden wants to give a speech. Hey, Biden's coming to Union Station to give a speech about how awful Republicans are. All right, we'll clear the homeless out for a few minutes. That's the move. But beyond that, the squalor is spreading in Washington, D.C., and the people who are in charge are making it worse. They just overrode a veto from a woman who painted Black Lives Matter on the ground in front of the White House and renamed the street. She's gone above and beyond for the pro-crime movement. She's gone above and beyond. And even she was like, this seems like a lot, Muriel Bowser. This seems like a lot. We shouldn't lower penalties for criminals. Yep, and yet they are. Congress has an opportunity to step up here. I hope Speaker McCarthy does that very thing. It is 4:49 now, WMAL traffic and weather. Let's take a phone call. Always enjoy hearing from Jason in Kensington, line one. Jason, good afternoon. You're on the Vince Colonnay Show.
Hey, g'day, Vince. How you going, mate?
I'm doing all right, Jason. What's on your mind?
Funny story from Australia. They had spotted a crocodile in a place called Stradbroke Island, which is way south of where they're supposed to occur. They only occur in the top tip of Australia. So this is sort of like an impossible, you know, scenario that this crocodile was swimming down near this island. So the news people came on and decided that this was a good opportunity to push climate change. So they had a climate change expert come on TV and say that, you know, people have to start getting used to the idea that crocodiles are going to start swimming, you know, up the Brisbane River, all these, you know, places where you're just impossible to see a crocodile. So people got wind of it, so they started doing their own thing and started putting logs in the water and taking photos and saying they'd seen a croc as well and sending it into the news. So these news people had people running all over the place trying to get documented, you know, evidence of these crocodiles. I mean, they were dead serious. And this guy's like, you know, this is all part of climate change. And it turned out it was a dugong, which is another version of a manatee. And so people were sending in pictures, say, yeah, I spotted a crocodile, and they had a picture of a post in the background, and said, oh, by the way, this is a dodo bird, by the way, as well. So it's like, I mean, people had so much fun with the media. This climate change thing is hilarious.
That's amazing. So the press, all these reporters were like Chicken Little running around trying to find the mysterious crocodile that shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, because, I mean, crocodiles only occur in like the far tip north of Australia. I mean, there's no way they come down that far. It's geographically impossible.
Well, I figured ever since Steve Irwin died, maybe they've had more free reign. You know, they've been able to get around the island.
But it was such a funny story because the people actually kind of were making fun of the press by setting in, by bombarding with all these pictures, and they just go out and they would put a log in the water and take a photo and say, yeah, we spotted one too. They would send boaties there. They would send people out to go and investigate it. So it drove them crazy.
You know something? That gives me a lot of hope because I was real worried about Australia through all this COVID stuff. Everyone was like, you know, like just keeling over for the government. They were staying behind their little taped lines and living in their trailers and they all handed over their guns. I was like, man, that Australian spirit is gone. Like the one, like in America, we've romanticized the Australian spirit. We consider everybody there to be rugged. It's all Crocodile Dundee, big knives.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like crazy. But no, during COVID, it was like, no, it's not like that at all. Everyone just like falls over when the government tells them
terrible.
To.
Yeah,
and yet
terrible.
Here you tell me Australians still have the gumption to troll the press, to make fun of them as they look for crocodiles in the wrong spot.
Yeah, it was hilarious because I thought, you know what, because now with COVID over there, it's gone exactly like the 180. They've gone. They want to forget about it. They don't want to talk about it anymore. And they're actually getting more cases now than what they ever had when it was peaking, which is kind of weird. Which is kind of weird because they have a 97% vaccine rate, but a lot of people are still getting COVID. So
yeah, that's weird.
People said that's it. We're done.
Man, you know what? It's never a disappointment when I get an Australian news report from Jason from Kensington. Jason, thank you very much. Hey, have a fantastic weekend. Appreciate that.
Hey, thanks, man. See you, mate.
Good to talk to you. Coming up, Mary Margaret Olohan joins us. She was out there covering the March for Life today. A great reporter from the Daily Signal. She'll tell us what she saw on the ground. A big celebration. Roe v. Wade overturned, and the crowds still showed up.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.